Well, David Frost here, and I've got with me three men who are going to contribute to the cascade of comedy we laughingly call Pull the Other One. And they are Frank Carson, Leslie Crowther, and Ken Dodd. Whoa! Right. Now, our other contributors, of course, are the many people throughout the world who've done odd things that have made the press. Like, for instance, Pamela Benning and Jack Carlson, who held their wedding ceremony on the ice of Lake St. Clair, the inland sea which separates Canada from the USA. Now, why did they do this? Well, Pam was from Toronto, Jack from Detroit. Neither wanted to marry in the other's country. So they compromised by doing it, by getting married on the ice in between. The wedding guests wore snowsuits. The bride wore thermal underwear.
Charming.
And instead of confetti, the couple were pelted with snowballs. And the groom got frostbite in a most unusual place.
Well, I hope
Toronto.
Lovely. I hope she didn't break it off.
Did he get icicles on his tricycle?
Not entirely. No. Well, that's the kind of dark but true story we want, and we've got them for our experts, and we'll be asking them for their explanations. Halfway through, we'll have a little variation for you, but more of that later on. So off we go, gentlemen. Shortly before Christmas in 1974, a bearded man crossed a Vancouver street and smashed a shop window with a baseball bat. Why did he do this? And why was he disappointed at the result? Leslie.
Well, I reckon. Well, he had a beard just before Christmas. He must have been hired as the Father Christmas for that particular store.
Yeah, I like that.
He'd found how much money he was getting, or how little money he was getting. He was so livid, he got his baseball bat and smashed the window as a form of protest.
Well, I don't believe in Christmas because it saves you buying presents. It was
Father Christmas.
What happened to your
father? It was Father Christmas at Selfridges, and he told me one day he was out of work. He was an actor, and he was out of work, so he was Father Christmas at Selfridges. And this young boy came up one day and said, "You've done half get about, don't you?" And he said, "What do you mean, get about, dear boy? What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you were in Harrods about half an hour ago." He said, "Oh, yes, you are a clever little boy, aren't you?" He said, "Are you going to be at Bentall's on Wednesday afternoon?" And not to ruin the mystique, my father said, "I expect I will." He said, "Well, you'll be bloody lonely. It's there after closing."
Kenneth,
this is quite a good picture, isn't it? A man, beard, crosses the street, smashes a window. A fellow I knew once threw a brick through a jeweller's window in Bond Street, here in London. The jeweller picked it up, brushed it off, polished it, laid it on a piece of blue velvet, and sold it for about 150 quid. Can't be done with sand for anything.
Well, that reminds me of the burglar. And he was out with his wife doing a bit of Christmas shopping. She said, "I'd like a fur coat," and he threw a brick through a window and got her a fur coat. And he said, "I'd like a diamond bracelet," and he threw a brick through the window and got her a diamond bracelet. And she said, "I'd like a refrigerator and a deep freeze." He says, "What do you think? I'm made of bricks."
Did you hear about the Irishman that went window shopping? Bought 36 windows.
I'm worried about the Irishman opened the paper shop and it blew away.
Leslie.
Aye.
Well, I'm just so worried about you. I mean, do you like pantomime if you don't like Christmas?
Yes, I do. Well, I love pantomime. I was in Aladdin and His Wonderful Lamp. I played the witch. But I got the sack because I was too well oiled every night. But a baseball bat, you see, by smashing the... I think I know what's happened.
He sold a lot of boxes tonight, Christmas presents. When he goes out, they were all empty. They're all dummies.
No, I think what has happened here, this man, a bearded man, crossed a Vancouver street.
Have you ever imagined what what you would look like with a beard? You'd look like a tramp peeping through a hedge.
Have you any other nice things to say about it?
Well, it was either going to be you or Leslie Crowther, and because you're the prettiest, I thought I'd pick on you.
Well, I think what has happened here, this man smashed the shop in frustration.
He must have seen something in the window that he wanted very badly.
He saw it, no, something that he didn't like.
No,
he wanted your record.
Was it a No, something that he wanted very badly. The Frank Carson Book of Wit and Humour. It's a very slim volume.
And yes. And you'll enjoy colouring it in.
Well, you haven't quite got there, folks. The man smashed the shop window in to get himself arrested and sent back to prison. He wanted to be in jail at that time to take part in the inmates' Christmas concert.
Very good.
You've been rehearsing there for months, and he was suddenly given an unwanted pardon. But alas, it didn't work, because the would-be jailbird was doomed to disappointment. It being the season of goodwill, the shopkeeper declined to press charges.
Now, well, of course, they do this in this country. Now, if anybody gets locked up over Christmas...
They don't.
They make a fuss.
Of course, of course.
They don't get a picture. They get a sausage with a feather stuck in it. But that's still Christmas dinner, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
Christmas in the nick?
There was a friend of mine got 6 months for doing his Christmas shopping too early.
How early?
Well, he was in the shop before it opened.
Oh,
that sounds true. That sounds true.
Canada, of course. Canada is a vast condiment.
It is, oh.
Lots of Irish people there. Lots of Scots people there.
The largest lake in the world is in Canada.
That's where they shot. There's a moose loose about the hoose.
There's the lake there. Lake Superior, which is exactly the same size as the Isle of Man, because they think it was a giant who lifted a big lump of earth out of the ground in Canada and threw it across the ocean and landed.
Are you making this up as you go along?
Yes.
A man called Crowther once went to Canada and he saw the sign, Drink Canada Dry, and he tried for several years.
Right, yeah. Well, we've dealt with Canada. Now, talking of drinking, the next problem is to do with drinking. I'd like your explanations here. The great comedian Jimmy Wheeler was known to take the occasional alcoholic beverage, which rarely affected his performance. But once, while waiting to go on at a star-studded charity show in London, he showed definite signs of inebriation. The producer looked at him, bemused in his dressing room, surrounded by empty bottles and the odd full one, and he decided on emergency action. What was it?
No comedians are ever the worst for wear. I don't think... I know very, very few comedians even drink. I mean, I've seen you have an occasional tizer.
Oh, really? Yes.
I'm on the dandelion and bird. Jimmy had a marvellous gag. You said this girl had a long hair growing out to the end of her nose. And when she sneezed, it cracked like a whip.
It's lovely, isn't it? He had another one. He said a fellow was shaving, and he had one of those open razors, and the razor slipped and it cut his nose off, and he got so frightened, he dropped the razor and cut his toe off, and the surgeon sewed the nose where the toe was, and the toe where the nose is. So every time he sneezed, he blew off.
He blew. Here's another one you won't like. Both these funny men along, Tommy, they're both drinking water. This is a wonderful thing. A lot of people think that comics need Dutch courage. Now,
no.
Foreign lager, I don't like it.
No, Heineken,
Rugger.
Mind you, lots of actors very often. I mean, what about that amateur actor who got drunk? Because he was terrified about this line. He had to come on stage and say, Hark, I heard a pistol shot.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And he came on and he said, Hark, I heard a shustle pit. A shistle pot. A postle. Did anybody hear that bang?
The great actor.
What about the announcer who couldn't say Rimsky-Korsakov? He had to. You see, it's not comics, you're right. It's actors.
Great actors.
People like you. And this guy couldn't say Rimsky-Korsakov, so he had a bit of a squiddle, you know, before this thing. And he said, the next composition is by that well-known Russian composer, Rimsky-Korsakov. And it is The Bum of the Flightleby.
Oh,
Oh, you little devil, Leslie.
All actors, there's lots of jokes. There's loads and loads of jokes about actors who...
Who tipple.
Yes. There's a fund of stories about a man called... A great actor called Wilfred Lawson. The Wilfred Lawson stories, of course, the most famous of them all is Wilfred Lawson, who's appearing in Dickie 3. And he's appearing in Richard III. And they were doing a matinee performance. And he and one of his chiners repaired to a local hostelry.
It was Robert Newton, the other one.
And several quarts later, they stagger back to do the matinee, and Wilfred Lawson totters onto the stage. And goes, and a gentleman in the circle who paid his money. After all, let's face it, every artist owes it. I think when an audience pays, they pay the greatest compliment in the world. So this man stood up, he said, "Sir, you are disgustingly drunk." And Wilfred Lawson just looked up with a little sly look in his eye. He went,
"You think I am drunk? You wait and see the Duke of Buckingham."
It's like that marvellous... That marvellous one when Larry Olivier was doing Henry V, and because it was in Ireland, they shot it in Ireland, didn't they? Just before the end of the war, and because all the able-bodied men were out fighting for king and country and all that, and quite right too, they were a bit, as has been said before, the extras were a bit limp-wristed, and one, and had a few, you see, and they were doing the Once More Unto the British Dear Friends, this is true, this Once More Unto the British Dear Friends once more, and so in order that they, all these screamers didn't look too like that, you see, they put visors on and covered the faces, but they didn't go like that, and then moving all that, and on the first take... Olivia came on this dirty great white horse saying, "Once more unto the breach, dear friends, once more, or close the wall up with our English dead. In peace there's nothing so becomes a man as modest stillness and humility, but when the tide of war blows in our ears, then imitate the action of a tiger." And from behind this visor a voice said, "That's right, you tell him, girl."
You were reminiscing there.
I was. Yeah. I was. It was murder behind that visor.
Richard III. Quick story. Richard III, and they're getting on with it. Massively performance. And somebody tells the actors, before the show play starts, that Tom Arnold, who at that time was the famous king of pantomime, Tom Arnold, was in the audience that afternoon. Now, pantomime is a lovely Christmas pudding mixture of all branches of show businesses, actors, singers, dancers, jugglers. But the actors do like to get in pantomime because they play the part of the demon king or the squire, anybody with a big voice. Blah, blah, blah. So this actor of playing Dickie 3, he obviously had his eye on pantomime because he knew Tom Arnold was in the front. And he staggers onto the stage and he said, "Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer." "Oh, yes, it is."
I love it.
Well, that doesn't explain why this producer was nonplussed and what he did to Jimmy Wheeler.
What did he do?
He told him that Frank's Carson was going very well and he sobered him up immediately and he went on.
I think good answer. It must be very difficult for a producer to have a comedian.
A drunk, yeah.
Comedian on his... Well, not necessarily drunk. A comedian on his hands... who he feels is perhaps a little bit, you know, volatile, a little bit sort of, you know, iffy. Likely to do.
Yuppie.
He probably substituted the bottles for, well, one of these health-giving drinks.
What he actually did, you're getting close, but what he actually did was a kindly way of avoiding embarrassment. While Jimmy was on one of his frequent trips to the loo, several cronies were installed in his dressing room. When the great man returned, they all congratulated him on a superb performance. And this convinced Jimmy that he'd already been on stage and done his act. And he was content to be put in a taxi and driven home.
Well, that's playing on a person's weakness. An old man of 75 was in bed with his wife, dear lady wife, and he turned over and nibbled her ear. 75, they're at Blackpool, you see, and he nibbled her ear, and she turned and she said, "You've had it." She said, "I don't remember it."
Well,
it's like the old man of 75 who got married to a young girl of 18, and the, and his friend said, you know, you're going to have to be very careful about sex. He said, why? He said, well, I mean, it could be fatal. He said, well, if she dies, she dies.
on the way here, I met an old man. He was crying just at the top of Regent Street, and I said, what's wrong? He said, well, I've married a young lady of 29-year-old. She's so kind to me. And he says, I'm 74, and she's bought me this lovely suit. And she feeds me like nobody's business, and we make love 3 times a week, and... Oh, it's dreadful. I said, well, what are you crying for? He said, I forget where I live.
You get these old cocks. An old cock of 80 will marry a young bird. You know, a young lady of 25. They'll try anything for rheumatism. This is...
How about the old guy who got married to this young girl, this old guy?
About 94 he was, and his friend said, how do you manage it? He said, oh, nearly every night. He said, yes, he really said, yes, nearly.
Well, that always reminds me of the lovely story when they call women the weaker sex. There was a queue up at heaven. You see, and St. Peter came out, and he said, those men who were boss of the household stand on the right, and those who were henpecked stand on the left. And all the men moved to the left, except one. And he stood there in his own. St. Peter said, was you the boss of your house? He says, no, the wife told me to stand over here.
Those marvellous stories are a perfect cue. They're all about human relationships, those last stories we heard. And so now I'm going to give our experts a chance to switch to giving advice. And that's a perfect cue for it. Various letters from all around the country, people who need the wise counsel of these three wise men. First of all, we come to our first particular letter from a lady in York, and she says this. How can I stop my husband snoring? I've tried corks down the back of his pyjamas. And snore springs up his nose.
Snore! Swedish. He was a Swedish film star. Jorgen Snorsprings.
Snorsprings. But nothing works. If I squeeze his nostrils, he just lets off a little whistle. Is there any other solution, Ken?
Yes, there is. There's a lady was saying, complained to another lady in the supermarket that her husband snored terribly. I've snored very, very badly. And, this lady didn't know what to do. She said, if he comes home in that state, he won't know what's going on. She said, take his clothes off and tie a ribbon.
Came home.
Married to the wife. To bed, fell onto the bed, absolutely out to the wine, and just commences. Oh, she said, well, I'm not going to have a night of this. I'm not going to stand this all night. She said, I'll do what Mrs. Thingy of the Road said. So she takes all his clothes off, and she had a box of chocolates that someone had given her for Christmas, and she'd saved the ribbon. So a beautiful big silken ribbon, and he's lying there in the buff. She right, this is it then, I'll try it. So she ties a ribbon on him. Tied a ribbon on him in a night and the bow as well. And, and immediately stop. And she had a beautiful night's sleep. When she making the breakfast the next morning, he staggers downstairs. She said, where the hell did you get to last night? He said, well, I don't know where I got to, he said. But wherever it was, I won first prize.
Frank, what do you think about this?
Well, I knew a fellow who snored so loudly, he actually wakened himself up. But there was a friend of mine, I think the answer to that would be by one of those... waterbeds. Those people who think, well, I'll go out and get a waterbed because friend of mine, the thermostat went wrong and he was poached to death.
One more suggestion for this lady.
Oh, yeah.
What she should do to stop us from snoring, if your husband snores, just when you when you're both going to bed at night, take two house bricks to bed with you.
Well, you need
take to... two house bricks and let him see them. He'll be too frightened to go to sleep. You won't
Brilliant advice.
Listen. Yes.
Well, I think the you see the problem about all snoring is it's all caused by nightmares. We had a daily once who whose husband was mad about football, and I made the mistake once of saying to her, "How is it?" Oh, she said, "It's terrible. Eats, drinks, and sleeps football." She said, "He doesn't have nightmares anymore. He has cooked eyes." So every night we're going off to bed, he sits up bolt upright with his eyes shut, shouts up the Rovers, and we're off. He said he had me out of bed six times last night with corner kicks. He said, I tried him with me hot water bottle this morning, it didn't work. He shouted out foul and gave me a free kick right in the penalty area. It was murder. And he said, and eventually, apparently, she bought this whistle, and she blew this whistle, and she, and it was the worst thing she could have done, because he went straight out of bed. Got into the kitchen, took a lemon from the larder, sucked it for 5 minutes, jumped back into bed and started playing the second half. And he changed ends. I mean, it was terrible. And in the 3 o'clock in the morning, she found him under the bedclothes with his torch saying, "Do you fancy a friendly by floodlight?" I mean, it's not...
Well, actually, in fact, I was in, going back many years, I was, and you remember you used to go into the old pro digs.
Yeah.
Nowadays, of course, we can afford hotels, but in those days, it used to be about £5 for the hall and the use of the stairs. And I remember being put in, and this fella, he was an acrobat, and he said to me, "Do you mind sleeping in the same bed as me?" I said, "No, not at all." He says, "The only thing about me is I snore." And I said, "Well, it's okay, I've got a cure for that." And we both got into bed, and I kissed him in the cheek, and he sat up all night.
Well, I think we've got some very good advice there. Very good advice there. And I think the best practical advice probably is Ken's there. Take two bricks. Take two house bricks. And we've time for one more agony aunt problem.
Did you see a little bit at the end? If I squeeze his nostril, he just lets off a little whistle.
I think that's a misprint. I'll actually let out a little whistle.
I hope it's a misprint.
Right, we've just got time for one more of these before we move back into the major tall tales. And this one is from a man in Bristol who writes, "My problem is pimply legs, which I prefer to conceal with a smart pair of socks. Alas, sock suspenders now seem practically unobtainable. Are there any other ways for men to keep their socks up, Leslie?"
Well, the best cure for him, of course, is actually to get rid of the pimple. And there is a marvellous new skin tonic on the market. And you rub it on. It doesn't exactly get rid of the pimples. It brings the rest of the skin up on a level with them. Wonderful. That's the answer, really.
Well, I knew a fellow who had a pimple on the back of his neck. He was from Scotland. He used to use it as a collar stud. But what to do here, if you want to wear a pair of socks, well, it is difficult now getting suspenders. So what you can do is buy a toupee and put two elastic clips over the ears and run them down the side of the body. And it means to say, not only will it hold your socks up, but your hair won't blow up.
Does that seem right to you, Ken?
I think if you've got pimply legs, you've got pimply legs, haven't you? But the answer to it is, be like the leg. We should wear tights.
That's right.
Wear tights. Now, I've tried this. It doesn't... It's a bit embarrassing for a man because the tights do tend to ride up and make you a bit crotchety.
Oh.
But,
and the tights...
I have worn tights.
Makes your legs look like a bag of monkey nuts.
You haven't seen my... I have very nice legs.
You have nice monkey nuts as well.
Well, we think, really, there's no cure for this poor chap. I mean, if you've got pimply legs, sir, you've got pimply legs, but Mr. Dodd says, try some tights. Middle-aged taxi driver, Alexei Sampos. We're back now to the true life stories, and I want your explanation.
Ah, yes.
middle-aged taxi driver Alexei Santos suspected that his young wife was being unfaithful to him. But she denied it, and he wanted to believe her. Then, alas, an event occurred that confirmed Alexei's suspicions. What was that, Frank?
Well, I'd rather not deal with this question yet, because I'm working on a certain train of thought. I would ask Mr. Dodd, though, because he's a lot of experience, and he's an older man. And a much wiser man, I'm sure.
Frank Carson, of course, knows nothing about taxi drivers at all, because, naturally, being a star, he goes everywhere in his Irish Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
And
Pony and Trap.
So he knows nothing about taxi driving. In fact, he went to a musical the other night and thought it was all about taxis. It was Come to the Cab, Hooray.
Yes, well, I said to a taxi driver, can you take me to Waterloo? I've got to catch a train. He said, we're a bit late for the battle, aren't you?
Not too late, right?
So what do you think? What do you think, then? What was the giveaway?
I think he probably... he probably dropped a passenger. I know. He was driving his cab. He picked up a passenger, and this fella asked to be dropped off at, 29 Nosaka Street, which is where he lived.
Absolutely correct.
Ah!
Oh, is that right? Well, well, well.
That was marvellous.
Alas, that's all we've got time for, dear friends. If you've got any tall tales to amaze us with or problems you'd like aired, we'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, David Frost here, thanking you for joining us. On behalf of Ken Dodd, Leslie Crowther and Frank Carson, devisors and researchers Andrew Palmer and Noel Brennan, and our producer Edward Taylor. And we hope you'll join us next time. It's time to pull the other one.